Hey, movie lovers, welcome back for another Anatomy of Movie. Today we go hunting, that's right, as we talk about Shane Black's The Predator. Stay tuned.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies. And now, here's Popcorn Talk's Anatomy of a Movie.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen, and movie lovers, it is Dimitri, Panos, and I.
Hey, hey! What's going on, movie fans? And Phil,
that's
you
right.
And I together again.
That's right. My name is not I. It is Phil Svitek, for those uninitiated. First off, we should welcome everyone to the show. If you're a brand new listener, brand new watcher, or a returning customer, well, good for you. Either way, we love having you on the show. Participate. There's a comment section. Let us know your thoughts and opinions on this movie. I'm sure there are going to be plenty. Speaking of which, let me also kind of say this for those of you who aren't familiar. Yes, we give our opinion. That is what we're here to do. But we're also here to give fact and information. So we go beyond just our opinions and review. We go into the storytelling. We go into the mechanics, the how and the why in terms of the making of. And, of course, the box office, which is the culmination of any movie.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then, aside from that, just based off that sort of description, you can probably tell that we're going to be very spoiler-filled. To that note, as you can imagine, we're going to talk about the entirety of Predator franchises. So it's not just going to be this movie. If you haven't seen the other ones or just don't care, you've been warned. It is spoiler-filled.
Yeah, and I think it's fair to say, though, that this movie is a direct sequel to Predator 2, to the first two movies. Everything else in between, they sort of kind of retconned.
Mm-hmm.
So, and they did some really cool little Easter egg things that we can talk about a little bit later. But it's sort of fun knowing that it is a direct sequel to the original Predator movies, the first two, anyways.
Mm-hmm. And last but not least, speaking of little Easter eggs and fun tidbits, you can get our rundown. It's in the description. It's a little PDF link. You click it, and that way you can follow along or just read the various notes that we sometimes might not get to.
Sure.
You know, we're a jam-packed show, generally about an hour, but that doesn't mean we can't cover it all within that hour. Where we always like to begin is with our thoughts on the movie to kind of dive into it. So, Dimitri, what did you think of The Predator?
I thought this movie was fun. I was in as soon as they said Shane Black and Fred Decker. So Shane Black, Fred Decker, they co-wrote one of my favorite Halloween time movies called The Monster Squad. Fred Decker also did this other cool little B-movie horror movie called Night of the Creeps. And when they work together, it's just a good old time. And so I was in. I was on board. I like Shane Black as a writer. Obviously, the gentleman has written Lethal Weapon. Most recently, he's directed movies like Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, The Nice Guys, two movies of which I enjoy thoroughly. I like his dialogue and even now the way he directs. So also Iron Man 3, which
yes,
again was polarizing to people, but I enjoyed. So I was in as soon as they said that he's going to be doing The Predator, and I thought it was a nice little 360 in a sense, being that he was an actor in the very first Predator with Arnold Schwarzenegger. So all in, and the movie delivered to me what I had expected from a Shane Black kind of movie. I had actually read or I'd seen somewhere as this movie, The Predator, described as a very violent, gory Monster Squad. And when I saw the movie, I was like, that's very apropos. That's what this movie is. You had a squad of these misfits, in a sense, fighting monsters. And it was violent. It was gory. It's very blue. The language is it's very R. Mm-hmm. For all those reasons, I had a really good time. I found myself laughing. I thought the action was directed really well. It was paced fine for me. It's not Mission Impossible. We've had some amazing action movies this past summer. And I'm not saying it's up at that higher echelon, but for $88 million, I thought they made a fun movie. And you can go to the movies and have fun.
Fair enough. I think $88 million is a little high for this, and now it's probably due to a lot of the reshoots, which we'll talk about.
Mm-hmm.
I'm surprised you usually say this. You usually give the phrase that this is a movie you got to check your brain in at the door. This to me is definitely one of those movies you got to check your brain in at the door. Mm-hmm. In fact, just don't even bring it to the theater. Don't just leave it at home. From that perspective, you can have fun with it. There is a lot of things in this movie that under today's kind of more PC culture, you kind of scratch your head at. But if you're looking for that kind of callback to the 80s, the old action movie of that nature, I think it works. I don't think – and here's the thing. Confession here. I've yet to see a Predator movie except for this one. Now, okay. By that same token, I kind of understand what the first Predator is. Like, I'm sure it's definitely a great action movie to some extent, but it's not going to end up in the Criterion Collection by any means.
You never know. I mean, they just released, Fox did release not too long ago, a special anniversary edition of it. I mean, look, the original Predator with Arnold Schwarzenegger, again, you can easily say the same thing, check your brain in at the door. But it's a fun movie. It's a fun action movie. There is a lot of machismo in Predator. And the dialogue in Predator, again, it's a sign of the 80s. It's when Schwarzenegger was just beginning to knock it out of the park outside of his Terminator character, so to speak, right? So this movie had a lot of that quote unquote machismo, but I also liked Olivia Munn in this movie. So
yeah, I did. I thought she was one of the better aspects. You know, to be honest, I appreciate that she was in there. I would have liked to see a little bit more strength from her as a mm-hmm, character. Mm-hmm. But you know, as far as the action and so forth, yeah, I thought it was the middle of the road. Like, I don't know if I can recommend it. Like, it's a must see in the theaters, believe it or not. Even though we're big advocates of that here. And I think, I don't know, I think if there's anything that I can point to, and I want to kind of kick things off this way, is bigger better.
Yeah, I mean, well, you did touch on something that made me smile, and you said PC.
Mm-hmm.
Movies don't necessarily need to be PC. Actually, that's one of the things that a movie that's rated R can try to get away with. And yes, this movie's not PC. And if you watch 80s movies, they would not, a good handful of them, would not be considered PC today, but it doesn't make them any less good movies. I actually applauded the fact that they went for this R rating and that they really weren't PC. I'm not one that gets easily offended. Marissa and I talked about that Happy Time Murders movie, which mm-hmm. wasn't PC, but it wasn't very funny either.
No, it was not.
So this movie wasn't PC, but I did find the rapport between this squad of misfits. I found the dialogue to be funny. Is bigger better? Well, I did see it in IMAX. I enjoy watching a movie like this on that big screen, and I had a far better experience than, say, if I had watched it on TV for the first time.
Well, let me rephrase. Is a bigger Predator better than a regular Predator?
I wish we saw... I wish we had more of the bigger Predator. It seemed to take a long time to dispatch with the Predator that we're accustomed to, that seemed to come from the first two movies into this upgraded Predator. I wish we got that sooner in the movie. Mm-hmm. Because that's a much more formidable force. Like, it seems that a lot of that action came in the last act of the movie, mm-hmm. right? When they're fighting that, I would have liked them to have been fighting that creature sooner.
Mm-hmm.
So
for all intents and purposes, I mean, I'm sort of let down that Shane Black's vision didn't come to fruition.
Mm.
There's plenty of articles out there, and I believe Mashable has a whole thing written about what Shane's original vision was to what ended up on screen. And I really do believe, because I also like Shane Black as well, that that would have been a far stronger movie. He went more for the comedic aspects and the outrageous aspects, and as you're pointing out, the rated R version. And I think the studio tinkered and made it more kind of serious.
Yeah, and it's funny because when you put it that way, it's the same studio. It's 20th Century Fox. So they own the Predator franchise. They also own the Alien franchise. And you can almost make a parallel with that Mashable article that David Fincher, who directed Alien, Alien 3, he actually got taken off the project. Like, because of his vision not being realized by executives at 20th Century Fox. And sometimes you just have to wonder, we talk about this. Yes, I would have liked to have maybe seen more of Shane Black's vision, but when do they step in? They didn't take the movie necessarily away from him, but yeah, I somebody tinkered that wasn't Shane Black. Mm-hmm. And it's just interesting that it's the same studio that the Alien franchise that Fox has desperately tried to mash together with two movies that didn't really do well, right? And in instances, sequels were tinkered with by executives, and maybe one, you know, maybe it didn't come out as well. Or if they just stayed with that vision, they could have had a better movie.
Yeah, and what's interesting, I mean, we've talked about this with Disney movies in particular of recent past, mm-hmm. particularly Marvel movies, but also the Han Solo movie. And, you know, what's interesting to note about this, like, yes, you're part of a franchise and whatnot, but you're not Marvel. You're not having to build a cinematic universe. And in that respect, like, if you made these changes just to make changes to create this bigger franchise, and you know, and universe, really? What's it worth?
Exactly. I don't disagree.
So that's primarily what I'm saddened at, because there's a couple of, you know, various plot holes that stick out like a sore thumb, and just what I've read, it sounds far more interesting. Like the Predator kind of there is supposed to be warning us of an attack and things right. like that, and I appreciated that also. Since you know the lore, again, this is my first one, so I'm only coming in with researched information, right. not firsthand knowledge. But the helmet is supposed to bring about certain added benefits. And yet, it seemed like, helmet or no helmet, these added benefits were there.
The helmet's added benefits, you know, at least according to this movie and from the first Predator movie, was just basically a lot of scanning type of, you know, being able to suss out and parse out heat signature, voices, targeting to an extent. But
they were able to do it without the helmet this time.
The Predators, yeah. Well, the Predator itself is a pretty formidable creature. In reading various things, people say, oh, he's this apex hunter who's looking for similar apex hunters on Earth to try to level the playing field. I'm like, no, there's nothing level about being able to turn invisible. Like, that's just not fair. Like, you can't turn invisible on your opponent. If your opponent can't see you, that's sort of kind of not fair. I don't care if it's Arnold Schwarzenegger or whatever. And it comes down to the wits of the character, so to speak. But even with the mask off, and there is a funny throwback, actually. There's a funny throwback to the original Predator. Predator is still a pretty damn tall specimen and pretty strong creature who has, you know, the claws, Freddy Krueger type, these like Wolverine claws that come out that can slice you in half. He can lift you and snap you. He can take your skull and like rip your head off and rip your spine out. So he's still a formidable character without weapons in the helmet. But the helmet is another one of those aspects of the character. Like, if you're saying he's trying to look for a fair fight, it's like, no, there's nothing fair about the fight at all. If anything, humans are trying to level the playing field to take away the technology that he has. So, you know, even without his mask, to your point, it's still a formidable creature to fight up against. And that was shown in the first one, and I believe the second one with Danny Glover.
Yeah, there's a funny callback. Arnold Schwarzenegger says, "You are one ugly motherfucker."
Yes, that's the.
And then here she says,
"You're one beautiful motherfucker."
Yeah. So.
And I was like, "Oh, that's funny." And it's funny that Olivia Munn's saying that. Anybody who's a fan of the first one, I said, "Ah, I like that." And again, it's using motherfucker. We talked a lot about brotherfucker.
Don't spoil that.
Yeah, again, that's kind of the blue language that's riddled throughout this movie.
Absolutely. All right, so let's dive in on the plot, right?
Sure.
You know, overall, it kicks things off with one of the main characters, Quinn, and he sees something. He sees the predator, and then there's essentially a big cover up of it, and they want to deem him insane, even though the government is well aware of these predators. And so, kind of maybe perhaps an inspiring story, you know, if you're a wannabe scientist and whatnot, and you write into the government, eventually they might hire you, depending on what your field of interest is. I'm pointing to, of course, Casey Brackett, Olivia Munn's character, who gets called in. And then from there, kind of things kick off.
Yeah. Well, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I don't know. Like, as a plot overall, it's rather simplistic, which I think works in its favor.
Sure.
You know?
I mean, the original Predator is sort of kind of simplistic, too. And what I at least appreciate is the trying to tie into the first two. They make nods to the first two movies, and they don't try to like cover it up. They said, Jesus, we know that this happened. We knew that these predators have come here before to hunt. We set up an agency for it. And then, you know, when Quinn McKenna falls upon this, who Boyd Holbrook, I thought, was really good in this movie as the retired Special Forces Army Ranger. Yeah, I mean, he sees something that he's told pretty much. He's basically being like, he sees it, he knows it, he tells his story. People don't want him to tell his story because they know it's true. So they're pretty much sending him off to a loony farm. Pretty much they were saying that they were either going to be lobotomized or killed, right?
Yeah.
So that's pretty dark. So.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this was. This was like a Suicide Squad in essence. And what I loved, I love the introduction of all of these characters because you got a little bit of their backstory in a very quick amount of time. And then when it comes to his turn, the way he says it, like basically I saw an alien and whatnot, and they're like, well, they thought we were crazy.
I saw an alien once. Yeah. And I liked, okay, I liked the backstories too. Particularly, Thomas Jane's character and
Braxley.
Braxley and
Baxley.
Baxley and
Coyle.
Baxley and Coyle's character I found to be very, very interesting characters together, as well as that commanding officer guy who said, "What are you here for?" And he says, "I shot my commanding officer." And you thought it was like an act of defiance, of mutiny. And you find out a little bit later on, he tried to kill himself. Right? And like all these little tidbits, I'm like going, okay, they're actually adding layers to these characters. And for me, it was making them likable because of their flaws, or they were suffering from PTSD is essentially what happened. And Baxley and Coyle, I mean, those characters, Coyle accidentally through friendly fire wiped out Baxley's troop and leaving the Baxley was the only one alive. And you get that. And it's a funny thing because it was the actors and Shane Black who actually sat down together and said, all right, well, let's make more backstory for these characters. And it's like, okay, well, there's going to be a court thing, and these two have to see each other in court, like, every day. and they hate each other. And then by the process of court and everything, at the end of the day, they end up walking out going, hey, you want to get a cup of coffee? You're right. And you get that there was a love-hate relationship between these two guys. And I just sort of like how they hash that out. They're two very likable characters who have their own way of dealing with the tragedy of war that they had to deal with. So, I mean, I didn't find it to be a disrespectful movie to soldiers. And I found the camaraderie amongst these men to be so one of the things that actually I liked the movie about. But particularly those two characters, they were funny together.
Yeah.
They, you know, I mean, I found this movie to be humorous, a lot more humorous than I anticipated.
And I would point to that as the Shane Black effect of it.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and the Fred Decker, absolutely. Absolutely.
So, yeah. 100%. Now, it's interesting, you know, kind of as far as this whole movie was advertised or, you know, brought to life is the Predator essentially comes to a suburban town, which, you know, hasn't really happened. And so I think that's an interesting premise because although for me, what's funny is that they don't use that as a bigger element. Granted, there is that Halloween aspect and right. The house blows up and whatnot, but as far as civilians and whatnot, it never reaches that depth as far as danger.
Right.
That I was expecting, but not to say it was necessarily a bad choice, but
yeah, I mean, what we end up getting, and it is to your point too, that I wouldn't have minded. I mean, I agree with you. I wouldn't have minded if that B plot of basically the original Predator, let's call it, is coming to Earth to give us tech or to give us a warning that we're about to be under siege or how to protect this, and the upgraded Predator is coming back to hunt the Predator down. And not so much like everybody in its path it's going to kill. It had this one mission to do. And I found the whole premise of the ecosystem and, you know, how we can save ourselves. It just was never really played up that much.
Yeah.
And I agree with you. It might have been a stronger story had it been that. And it would have lent more, like, we would have had the Predator, not the upgraded Predator, but Predator on our side as we're fighting the upgraded Predator, which didn't really, that didn't materialize at all. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it became a different movie.
Well, so explain kind of that side of it, right? The thing that I think ultimately for me ends up being, like, I got it, but it ends up being somewhat confusing and convoluted was, hey, I need McKenna. And I get why, but he doesn't need Quinn McKenna. He needs Rory McKenna, the son, of course. And so I got it, but I didn't quite get it. And then, of course, there's the addition of, like, a Predator dog.
Right. Which we didn't necessarily need.
No.
I'll cop to that, you know. And the Rory McKenna thing is, again, this is a person that purposely written. He was on this the spectrum. And in a sense, he's a Rain kid. And he's able to figure things out. And I think because of his affliction, he became, in a sense, a superhero, and he became what could ultimately bring down the upgraded Predator. And I think that's why that kid became such a focal point in the movie, is because of what he was able to see in ways that us mere mortals can't look at math the same way, because it came down to looking at fractals and stuff that I don't understand. I mean, he became a scientist at 12. He had a desk.
Yeah.
He was part of the project, you know, because he understood it. So that's what I don't know. How did you see it?
I mean, I think it's, I wish there was something other that really foretold of his skills. To just say that he's good at computer games and he has autism, and this is what separates him to be this better than human version, I like the sentiment that, you know what, just because you have autism doesn't mean that, you know, you're quote unquote have a disability. Like you're equally able to accomplish certain things. And in fact, if, in this case, better. But I don't know.
I looked at him as a person who could easily put things together. And when he came across not only the Predator helmet, but the, I forget what it was, let's call it the hard drive, mm-hmm. that showed, I don't know what it was showing, but he was able to piece things together. So, and I did like the fact that, you know, again, it was not disrespectful, I thought, to a child with autism or anything. And in fact, it more showed it in a positive light, yeah. that, you know, this character ended up contributing and was still able to have a heart and still be, you know, and still fit in, mm-hmm. with, you know, his dad and those around him.
Absolutely.
I thought that was a positive thing.
I agree. And, you know, one of the stronger points for me was those slower moments, the moments of bonding. You know, and to a degree, I wish there was a couple more between whether, you know, both McKenna's and also just Casey. Not that I wanted a love interest. You know, I get that he's divorced at this point, but I didn't need a rekindling of any kind, whether with the ex-wife or Casey, but just some of those heartfelt moments, I think, could have perhaps added. And I know it's an action movie, so you generally don't have too many of those, but...
Right. You know, though, to your point, I can add to this that when Shane Black, when they originally went to Olivia Munn, she turned it down. You want to know why she turned it down? She said, you know, 99.9% of the times when a woman takes a role like this, it ends up being the love interest. And I didn't want to be the love interest. And it took Shane Black, had to go to her and convince her and show her the script and go, you're not the love interest. He's like, don't worry about it. Like, you're going to be your own character. And when Shane Black had reached out to her personally, she had already been a fan of Shane Black, and she really didn't want to turn the opportunity down. But after he explained to her how this character was going to be, she was like, I was thrilled to death. I had to jump at the chance to work with him. And he was right, and he kept my character true. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting that you brought up romantic interest, and I didn't need that either. And there really wasn't much of a, like, when you look at things like the original Predator, there is a female character in it. And again, that movie too doesn't, they don't go into romance too much.
No.
In that movie.
So let's talk about the Predator and kind of the evolution, if you will. Sure. And, when I guess we could to an extent talk about how they kind of made it as well in terms of the production, because I do like it does look humanesque in terms of its overall shape, and so obviously in that perspective you can always put a human inside a suit, and I like that ability.
Yeah, and so is a gentleman by the name of Brian Prince plays the Predator, for lack of better words, the original Predator from the 80s that we all know and love. This guy on his own, 6'9.5", and he's a parkour artist, and he's the Predator. And once he was costumed fully as the Predator, he loomed over 7 feet in height. That's pretty tall. So Prince goes on and he says, you know, they told me what to be prepared for. He goes, because it really gets hot in the suit and it's restrictive. He goes, he's originally from Georgia. And he says, wow, you know, it's really hot and it gets humid there. He goes, I can do that. Not a problem. Still, he goes, it was hotter than I would have ever imagined. One thing that really surprised Prince was all the help he required. Not only getting into the suit, but throughout the day, he had the suit on. He's like, I had my own team of people, and like, I couldn't bend over and pick something up. He goes, or eat a drink. He goes, which I had to do. So he had done stunt work, but he was new to this. And, you know, there were times when he was fully suited up and like, okay, let's do this. I'm ready to go. And hours would go by, and he was just sitting there in the suit. as happens on a movie set.
You hurry up and wait.
Yeah, hurry up and wait. So his mask, which we had, we had, I forget. Oh, well, there it is. It's in the Predator thing right here.
The poster.
Like from the poster. It was created from a mold of Prince's head and fit very snugly on. And the mask was tight, but not just tight enough. And in those moments when I had to do hard jerking movements, the mask shifted and bruised and cut into my nose. So, you know, what a job. But what's interesting here is that that Predator was practical for the most part, where the upgraded Predator was pretty much CG. They had to go about because they just couldn't do that practically. I get
talk
it.
Talk to Peter Jackson. He'll give you some perspective. Right. Literally.
So, but get the head. The head weighs between 7 and 9 pounds. And with dreads and slime, it's about 10. So he has to have this on his head.
That's a lot of weight.
It's a lot of weight.
10 pounds, you might look at him and be like, oh, that's nothing. It's when you're having to carry 10 pounds
right
on your head.
Yeah. And so Gillis, they were of this Alec Gillis and Tom Woodward Jr. They co-own Amalgamated Dynamics. And they were the designers of this suit, the creature. Gillis goes on to say, hey, he was telling Prince, he goes, you know, man, he goes, this is the opportunity of a lifetime. You get to go down in history as one of the few people who have ever played a Predator. And oh, by the way, it's going to be miserable. So, well, trying to make it not so miserable for the guy. But yeah, so that's how that's what this Prince gentleman had to go through. And that helmet too, it's fiberglass, and he goes, it's almost like you're impossible to hear anything going on. So yeah, he had a lot to, you know, take the head off just to, you know, he had to take the head off and mask just to get a break. So yeah, he went through his hardship, but he did a good job. You know, when you say like things like you're so restrictive he couldn't bend over, watching the movie and I'm like going, he seemed pretty agile.
Yeah.
Like, you know, so he did a good job.
He pulled it off, absolutely.
He did.
And you know, you can't have a Predator movie where you don't buy into the Predator.
No.
And you know, even though people aren't buying the movie as much, you can't fault. I really think they pulled off the Predator quite well.
I thought so too. And again, they did it in a very thoughtful throwback kind of way. Mm-hmm. So, and if we want to talk a little bit too about throwback kind of way, there is family legacy within Predator in two ways, in a sense. Number one, Shane Black is in the original Predator movie. He's part of Arnold Schwarzenegger's commando team. And how he was brought on, he had written Lethal Weapon, right? And they wanted to bring Shane Black on to act in the movie, but also to give a hand in the writing. And when they brought him on and told him this, at the time, Shane Black just wanted to act. And he's like, no way, man. He's like, no way. He's like, I just, nope. You hire me as an actor. I don't want to write anything. You know, there's no need. You get a good script. I just want to act. And the producers were like, what a dick. Okay, fine. You'll act. He's in the movie. He's also the first guy that gets killed. So he was out pretty soon. And Shane Black, admittedly, he's been very candid about his past. And he said, yeah, I was a jerk. He goes, there was no need. He goes, I was a jerk. He goes, but I did get to work on that. Now I'm back now and I want to make right and I can do all this. So that's one way in which it's paying homage to the Predator by bringing Shane Black back. But Jake Busey's character, he plays Dr. Sean Keyes, who studies Predator at the Project Stargazer. Well, I know you didn't see Predator 2.
But I know Gary Busey.
But Gary Busey is in Predator 2.
Yeah.
And Sean is the son of Peter Keyes, the government scientist, who, again, is looking for the Predator. So that's a nice, again, It doesn't blare out at you. And I've actually met him because he was on Contact. And, you know, he's actually really cool, really nice guy. But I thought that that's a nice little through line that doesn't jump out at you. And if you watch Predator 2, you go, he's, oh, wow, that's pretty cool. I sort of kind of like that. I thought that it was pretty cool that they're able to tie that in nicely.
There's definitely a lot of small Easter eggs, right, that you can sort of look at. Certainly those. When she, for example, in the actual lab, let's say, there's a lot of callbacks, like the Xenomorph tail sphere from AVP. So it's there if you want it.
And the weapons that were in the non-museum museum, so to speak, were from the original movie. And what's interesting, too, is that Shane Black wasn't in the second movie at all, but he and Fred Decker, and this allowed them to work together again as friends. And again, they just had fun, and they do what I feel they do best. And I don't know why Fred Decker doesn't get any more work, but I don't know. They took the time to at least appreciate the first two movies. Even though Shane Black dies early in the first one, they still looked at the second one, which is on cable now. If you have like all the bazillion cable channels, yeah, you should look for it. It's free. So, yeah, I think that they did a half-decent job of doing those little Easter egg-ish things. At the end of, if we talk about Easter egg, at the end of Predator 2, when Danny Glover goes on to the Predator ship. I know you haven't seen it, but he goes on. If you haven't seen it, this is going to be a spoiler. So he sees an alien head, like the alien. So that's why there was always the, alien versus Predator. But anyways, I digress. I'm just talking Predator Easter eggs.
All good.
It's fun.
Did you think, I mean, a lot of stuff took place at night. And generally that helps whenever you have to do CG or cover up certain things. Do you think it was shot too dark or no?
No, I'll tell you why. If I want to keep this in within the Predator family of things, I'll tell you what's too dark. The last Alien vs. Predator movie is virtually unwatchable, especially on TV. I don't care if it's this size. I mean, that was dark. You can't see anything. It's like, turn on a freaking light or open the aperture to your lens. Let me see something. You're right. I think sometimes when you film it dark, it allows you to cover up mistakes, or it allows you to cover up a practical effect, like wires and cable and things like that. It's always wet. I didn't find it to be too dark in the movie theater that I saw it in. If you had a theater that wasn't using the proper throw and the proper light lumens for the bulb and the projector, it may have been too dark.
Mm-hmm. Well, isn't Larry Fong did the cinematography,
yes,
and he's known to do kind of more "quote unquote" darker movies. Batman v Superman. I don't think there's a day shot in that entire movie, if I remember correctly. Watchmen, another dark movie that I also don't think ever saw the light of day.
There was something in Snow, which was white.
He's done Kong Skull Island, so that
had
a lot more.
A lot of jungle.
Yeah, that was his break.
Yeah.
He's like, I want to see some sunshine.
Well, let me ask you, did you find the movie to be too dark?
No, but towards certain parts, when certain action did take place, I think because there's so many characters, you sometimes lose a couple aspects of it, and obviously you're focusing on the action at a given moment, but I kind of want to see, okay, what's everyone else doing and how's it all coming together, rather than, okay, he shoots this dog, let's say, and then boom, this shot, and then, oh, they're all dead. Great.
Yeah.
So that's just me. But overall, as an action movie, I thought the set pieces did work favorably.
I think Shane Black knows how to film action, and I didn't find it to be overly cut, overly edited, overly shaky cam. You know, Fong goes on, he does talk about much how much of the film was shot at night. And he's like, night usually means scary. And the challenge, too, is the difference in scale of humans. A little human, the predator, giant predator. You know, he was trying to provide shadow, dark light, freneticism, chaos that allows some of that scariness to come through. I didn't find it to be a scary movie, but then again, I didn't think the first two Predator movies were scary movies. They were what they were, and that's just action movies. That's
all. They have an intensity to them, certainly.
Sure. I mean, you know, but John McTiernan did the first Predator. I believe it was Steve Hopkins who did the second one. He was a gentleman that did that. He did a movie with Tommy Lee Jones and Jeff Bridges, which took place in Boston. Tommy Lee Jones is a terrorist. Steve Hopkins is he's a pretty straightforward, simple director. Knows how to shoot action. Not as well as John McTiernan. Say that again. Blown Away. Yeah. Not a bad movie. Actually filmed in filmed right in Boston. Steve Hopkins is a good director. But I think Shane Black, too, has matured. I mean, if anything, he proved by doing Iron Man 3 is that he can direct big budget action. And I don't think The Predator had the budget that Iron Man 3 had. But I think the way he doesn't do it in a way where you're wondering what the hell's going on in a gunfight.
Yeah. Well, here's a segue into it. I want to talk about it because essentially as kind of reviewers and journalists, we have to and try to give you all the information, but I don't want to because it kind of brings attention to something negative. Speaking of Iron Man 3, there was someone that Shane Black knew, an actor, I won't say his name, and then he gets cast in this. He was supposedly set up the introduction of Olivia Munn's character, and he's a known sex predator. Speaking of real predators, and this leads to a big controversy, and Fox eventually takes the piece out of the movie. I don't know. Do you have an opinion on this?
It's an opinion. There were very serious charges. And from what I understand, this person, it was a sexual thing about he was being a predator to a 14-year-old girl online. It's a very serious charge. And it happened decades ago. Shane Black, as a friend, just trying to help the person out, you know, he gave him the job. Now, I think where the fault lies is that there's no accountability. I know he had done his time. He's a registered sex offender. But there was no accountability. They didn't give cast and crew like a heads up to this. And while I believe that Shane Black had, you know, he was trying to do a nice thing. I think they didn't do necessarily the right thing. I know Olivia Munn was on TV, and all this news broke, too, at perhaps what would have been one of the worst, most crucial times. And this was just prior to the movie's premiere and debut at the Toronto International Film Festival. And Olivia Munn took it to heart, and as she should, and as any other person on cast and crew, that there was nothing... There was nothing said of this person coming on set. Now, there's nothing said that the person did anything or acted irresponsibly on set. Doesn't forgive. I'm not saying that this would forgive that this person's actions. And I at least appreciate Shane Black trying to help somebody who's in a really bad case, who may have changed for all we know. I don't know the gentleman at all. But there should have been, whether it was from 20th Century Fox or maybe Shane Black going to 20th Century Fox, they didn't vet the person, but they rarely vet these sort of things because why do you have to? An announcement should have been made. Give actors the opportunity. Now, I'm not saying that that would have gone well for that gentleman. You know, Olivia Munn, upon finding out, might have said, There is no freaking way I'm doing a scene with him at all. So maybe instead of not putting him in the movie, you know, make him a grip or something. I don't know. But I think the controversy, there was a cloud of this movie and it could have lent.
Yeah, I mean, the interesting controversy kind of then is, and it's being now cleared up, but Olivia ended up doing a lot of press by herself.
Yes.
And a lot of people weren't coming to her aid now.
No.
you know, Sterling K. Brown and Holbrook have come out and said, you know, different and that have been in support of her. For example, Holbrook's statement is, "I want to start by apologizing for the statement coming late. In the current conversation, I do not take any of what has gone on lightly, and I want to speak to the most honest and genuine place possible. I have stated before, and I will state it again, I am proud of Olivia for the way that she handled a difficult and alarming situation, and I am grateful that Fox took the information seriously and took action swiftly."
Mm-hmm.
So,
but I wonder, like, did Olivia Munn, because this goes into a deeper issue, did she... Prior to, I mean, you're right. She did a lot of press on her own regarding this. And, you know, did she go to executives at Fox first? Did she go to Shane Black first? And it's your, and again, it just came at this very crucial time. And you're right. Many people were very quiet upon this because she was doing this, you know, it's, by her doing what she's doing, I understand what I understand, and I don't disagree with it. It's just she's doing it at a time when people are trying to promote this movie. It's a shell shock to some of the people. Can't say it's a shell shock to Shane Black.
He did apologize.
He did apologize a little bit
something
later.
Something to know.
Yep, and so it comes out. She does this, and everybody is like, okay, what are we doing? But you ultimately, they do the right thing. And you come out, you apologize. They acted swiftly. They took a scene out. And, you know, but it also, it just put that cloud on it. You just hope that going forward, right, that those executives and every other executive who's watching, that just be a little more conscious about what may happen in that if a woman comes out and says, whoa, you're putting me next to what? And listen, react as quick as you can. Help.
Well, I think the biggest thing as far as preventative action is just having more background checks. You know?
Do you have to background check like every... I mean, think about it. Like,
unfortunately, the answer is probably yes.
Mm.
You know,
it
sucks to go that route. But, I get it's going. It's like the TSA route of now everyone's got to do it.
But, I get it, but again, too, like when you think about how this business works, a lot too. He's a friend of Shane's. Shane's like, all right, I'm going to give you a small role. You'll be able to get a SAG card or something, but I'm going to help you out. I understand from Shane Black's heart knowing it's a friend of his. He did his time. He's not the same man as he was when this happened. He's trying to help. But at the same time, he should have known the type of jeopardy that, and again, I don't even know how it leaked out that this happened.
But, yeah, those details I don't know and whatnot. So,
and you know, he had to have weighed this. I mean, somebody would have thought, okay, pros and cons here, especially in today's environment. If I'm putting you in this movie, and it gets out, dude, that's my reputation on the line. Like that's and it's going to affect everybody else. Look, I'll get you a job, but I'm going to get you a job behind the scenes, you know, or as a grip or as, you know, something. I just don't want you. I don't know. I don't know what you do.
I don't know necessarily what you do, but I do understand the perspective of that. you know, for maybe in Shane's eyes, the person had atoned. And furthermore, it's kind of just like, okay, small role. If you bring any attention to it, if you highlight it, then you bring attention to it rather than just like, just let it be. I get that perspective, and unfortunately, it blew up in his face.
Yeah.
You know, and it's certainly no secret. Like, when you're a director, you've got a lot on your mind. And this, I'm sure, was just kind of an innocent, okay, boom, boom, not really giving it. Like, this sort of dissection of really thinking about it, I'm sure, is not what went into the decision-making at the time.
No.
It was just a simple, okay, sure, let's, yeah, okay, fine.
Sure.
All right. So,
but you have to do the right thing. And albeit the response was late, it still was the right thing. You had to stand up and take, you know, Olivia felt strongly enough. I mean, it wasn't, you know, and as a woman, and she found it to be very offensive. And in today's world, you have to account for that and be sympathetic.
Absolutely.
So, you know.
So all in all, I think, as you said, they did the right thing and they were able to pull it off. So kudos to them. And ultimately, to be honest, just in the way the scene's described, I don't think I really miss it, to be honest. Like, it's supposed to be an introduction of her character. I'm introduced just fine the way it is. So
yeah.
I actually think it ended up being a better, a double blessing, if you will.
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah. Unfortunately, what's not a blessing is this Rotten Tomatoes score. Although it is higher, believe it or not, than a lot of other movies that we've also liked. Right. 34% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yes.
Which is not obviously not great, but what also kind of combined doesn't make it great is a C+ on CinemaScore.
No, I am definitely in a minority when it comes to this movie, and I understand that, I get it, but no, not at all. The movie was really not received that greatly from the critics. So C+ is not a fantastic grade. Prior to us going live and on air, you had said in your theater, you actually witnessed people were walking out.
Oh, by the droves.
By droves. Wow.
And, you know, I mean, I also said I would have loved to see, in hindsight, I would have taken note of when exactly they left, only because I would have been curious to kind of see that aspect of it. But yeah, one guy left, and then all of a sudden it just opened up the floodgates eventually. And by the time this was in a big theater, so when you start off with a lot of people. By the time you end, and you look around, you're like, this is a ghost town. Did the Predator kill you guys? Like the Predator literally killed them off.
That's great. Nobody left, or at least that I witnessed leaving when I saw it. I saw it last Sunday. So, you know, it's interesting. I don't know what people were necessarily expecting. I mean, personally, I found it to be better than the two Alien vs. Predator movies, and even better than there was a movie called Predators. I thought it was a better movie than that. If you were expecting it to be like Arnold Schwarzenegger's movie, well, I guess that's on you. It's not that necessarily. And yes, it's very blue. I mean, it is, you know, it pushes. It's rated R. It is not PC from a dialogue standpoint. I liked the characters. Like I said, sometimes movies can just be fun. They don't have to be masterpieces. I had fun watching this iteration of The Predator.
I will say, I think the budget was way too high.
$88 million. Huh?
I think go around 60. But then, okay, so Penske Business Media, they have an article, and they cite the overall budget, including advertising, $208 million.
See, that's a lot of money. That, I don't,
I can't verify that it's right or wrong, but I can I can point you in the direction of this article and say this is what they're stating the entire budget is.
I mean, I know that we know, and we talked about this, that there had to be some reshoots. You know, I mean, I'm looking at less than 200 from a P&A standpoint. I don't know. There wasn't a ton of advertising that I can recall. Like, it wasn't,
I don't remember seeing a single trailer before this movie had come out.
I saw a trailer, but, you know, I mean, what did you say? 200 and what?
208. Listen, again.
Yeah, that's what, I mean, I'm just going to have it penciled in. I had it penciled in at about 150 mm-hmm. plus, but, you know, and here's the thing with me, too. Since it was going to be at Toronto, and I had actually this conversation with people at Fox, I said, oh, you guys must be pretty high on this Predator. Like, why else would you be showing it at Toronto? Like, well, why? I mean, if you have a bad movie, it's a lose-lose situation. If you have a bad movie and you're going to be showing it in a place that gets a lot of publicity in the movies, a lot of reviews come out for movies, like, you wouldn't intentionally put in a bad movie. So I really felt that Fox was standing behind this movie, that they felt they had the goods. And then I had heard, like, you know, it didn't do so well. And I'm like, well, why did you bother showing it? Like, seriously. Like, because when you're in a film festival and you're a movie of this caliber, it's not like you're looking for distribution. You're just looking for press. And I could tell you this, just from working my studio experience, right? You know, like, when you have a bad movie, you just do. I mean, your execs are invited to screenings well before the movie's released, and you can watch that movie and go, my God, what are we going to do with this? This is horrible. They had a finished product before going to Toronto. I mean, if anybody was like smart, they would have said, you know what? Let's just release this like a movie. Like, this doesn't need the added press in Toronto. Huh. And, you know, I don't know. It didn't help.
And also just action movies generally. Like, I can't remember the last time I've heard of an action movie coming out of a film festival. Overall, it's not a genre that does well.
But at the same film festival, they showed Halloween, which we'll dive into more
horror
after.
Horror is different.
But, you know, again, though, you wouldn't. The way I look at it is, why show something that is even mediocre? It's something that gets that you're not looking for distribution. You're really just showing it to get publicity out of it. And if it's mediocre at best, why even bother? Why spend the money? Because A, you're spending a ton of money to put talent up. They're going to Toronto. You're flying them in private jets, no doubt. You're putting them up in really nice hotels in Toronto. They got to do press up there. They're going to come out to introduce the movie. They're going to do a red carpet. That's a lot of money. Yeah. That's a lot of money right there. So maybe it was 200. I mean, when you throw in to do a festival and knowing that you only have a mediocre, like, kind of a movie, what's your game plan? What are you thinking? Just release it like a regular movie.
Maybe it was meant to throw people off. I don't know.
It threw me off because once I found out it was going to Toronto, I did believe. I said, well, Fox must have the goods. Like, because why else would they? Why would they show a bad movie? So I went and going, I was excited. I was like, oh. And then I read all the reviews. I'm like, what the hell are they thinking? 35% Rotten Tomatoes?
Well, overall right now, let's round up 68 million worldwide gross. About 32 million as of right now in the U.S.
Yeah. So, I mean, it did come in at number one, but it's a slow. You know, school's back in session. School's back in. This is rated R. Your Thursday night preview nights are not going to be as big as they used to be. And so, you know, even though it was number one with 24 $1.6 million. That's, you know, they're saying, oh, well, it's a very slow weekend at the box office. And yeah, it is compared to like when you're looking at what summer box office is. So, yeah, at the end of the day, who knows? 67. I mean, 53% of that, though, came from foreign. So yeah, it's a little bit higher than the domestic. I think eventually it could, I don't know, in one way, shape, or form, who knows if it'll make its money back. I don't foresee there being another movie, though.
Not for a while. Not unless we get a reboot.
Yeah.
I don't think so. All right, well, that does it for our coverage today of The Predator. I'm sure there's lots of other stuff we could have talked about, but let us know in the comments section. We are always happy to discuss and converse with you there. In the meantime, you can also interact with us on a more personal level.
Well, and there was a gentleman on Twitter. I don't have him, but he asked us. He actually reached out to our Twitter feed, to all of us, to Marissa, to you, myself, and he said, are you guys going to do The Predator? He seemed very excited. So I know that there's another person out there who liked the movie like I did, at least. So there's two of us who enjoy The Predator.
There you go.
And thanks for tweeting. Like, it was actually sort of kind of cool that somebody was like, hey, you guys going to cover this? I appreciate the fandom.
Well, speaking of which, next week we will cover White Boy Rick and The House with the Clock in the Wall.
Yes.
Is what it's called. This is one of those titles I'm going to say multiple times until it fully sticks. In the meantime...
I saw the movie, so all I'm going to say about it is do this. Do yourself a favor and go see the movie in IMAX. See it in IMAX because for 1 week only, a 3D IMAX version of Michael Jackson's Thriller... in its entirety, it's 15 minutes, because it is a short film directed by John Landis, is on the head of the House of the Clock and its Walls. And it's very much worth it.
All right. So Dimitri is at dmovie1701, so you can always ask him questions there.
Please.
I'm at Phil Svitek, and Marissa this time is in the booth. She is at Serafini TV. Thank you, guys. We'll see you next time.
Bye.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.